I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Josh Haberman. He is music director of the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Now, you've had a whole season, and this is the first time we've gotten you on, but you've got something coming up starting tomorrow and through the weekend, namely the Mozart Requiem.
Yeah, one of the great pieces in the choral orchestral repertoire that we've got. We're really excited to be closing our season with it. It's a collaboration with the Santa Fe Symphony, which we're really happy about as well. And mezzo-soprano Susan Graham joins us as a special soloist for that. So it's going to be an incredible evening of music.
Tell us about this piece. I mean, this is one of Mozart's latest pieces. Is it his last, the
It's
last
his
thing he
last,
wrote?
absolutely. Yeah, he died writing it. He didn't finish it. This is one of the great mysteries of the how it came about. There was the emissary, some call him the gray emissary or the dark emissary, who came to him and anonymously, through an intermediary, commissioned the work. And we later discovered that this person who commissioned it was a count, who was a mediocre composer on his own, but had a history of commissioning famous composers and then stealing the work as his own.
Oh my
Yeah,
goodness.
so this is what he had done, and he went through an emissary and he commissioned Mozart. Well, Mozart, in writing it, fell ill, and he knew he was dying. I mean, he had a sense that this was probably it for him, and he said, "Well, I'm writing my own requiem. Isn't it an amazing thing?"
Did he really say that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he absolutely knew what was going on, and did die without completing it. But his widow, Costanza, wanted to recover the fee that was due Mozart on the completion of the work, and so she turned to his students, to Mozart's students, to complete it. And the person who was there close at hand was Franz Xaver Süssmayr, who was one of his students and also a composer. And he did his best, along with a team of others, but it was really Süssmayr's, ultimately his idea, to complete it, and he did the first completion, and that's the Mozart Requiem that most people know to this day is the Süssmayr version.
Can you tell if you're a classical music person where one leaves off and the other begins?
Not really. I mean, it just depends on your musical tastes and level of knowing it. Because the Süssmayr version came down to us now, and it's been the performance tradition, it's what was performed, after Mozart's death, even at his service, portions of it were performed. So it's the one that everybody knows, and so everybody says, "Oh yeah, it's just so familiar, it all sounds like Mozart." But interestingly enough, there are moments in it where there are some either omissions or awkward harmonic writing, or sometimes the voices don't quite work out the way they should. And so there have been other completions, scholars who've come along afterwards and said, "Okay, there's a reason we don't know Süssmayr's music," because he himself wrote a lot of music, nobody's ever heard of it, because perhaps he wasn't the best one to complete it. And so other people have tried. And the version that we'll be doing is, in fact, a recent completion by a scholar named Robert Levin. He wrote it in the early 90s, and this is, I believe, a New Mexico premiere of the Levin completion of the Mozart Requiem.
That is fascinating because when I think about what is analogous to this, you think of maybe art restoration, where a piece of a painting was lost and it needs to be restored. And of course, the goal of that is to make yourself, as the artist, completely invisible.
Yes. And that's what Levin has tried to do. Of course, it's an impossible task, but he engaged in an incredibly deep study of Mozart's style, of the style of other composers of the era, and what he did is he went back to Süssmayr version, and we know from the records what Mozart wrote and what he didn't. So he started with that, and then he said, "I want to keep as much of the Süssmayr as possible." Some people have cast it out and said, "No, we're going to recompose this whole thing because I know better." And the reason that I love this Levin version is because he honors the tradition that we all know of 200, 300 years almost of this piece being written, of Süssmayr coming down as the official voice of Mozart because he was there. And no one now can say that we were at Mozart's bedside the same way that Süssmayr was. At the same time, Levin, through his own study, and he's a very smart guy, looked at the style and said, "Okay, there are places where we think the Süssmayr is just as good as it gets, we're not going to mess with it. But there are other places where, for example, a fugue would have been called for." And Süssmayr didn't like to write counterpoint, didn't like to write complex music. But he knew that Mozart would have, in that moment, written one. So he takes a scrap of a melody that was found in Mozart's hand and turns it into what he believes Mozart would have intended, which is a great fugue and one of the Amen movements. So it's things like that that I think are really interesting for people to who know the Mozart Requiem, and want to come hear it, and they'll hear a very familiar but at the same time slightly different version, and in my view, a wonderful version of a great work.
Now, you say that there have been different completions over the years. One of them was contemporary. The one you're talking about, the Levin, is contemporary to Mozart. The new one is really brand new. It's in our era.
Yes.
Were there any that were written, for example, during the Romantic period?
Yes, there were.
And did they reveal that period in an unintentional way?
Absolutely. Well, we're all products of our own time period. We can't escape it. It's the air that we breathe, right? So, absolutely. And there have been new attempts, more of them recent than in the 19th century, but there certainly were earlier 20th century versions that revealed that time period that people don't do much anymore. But each one has its own champions, and each one, you know, will have conductors who say, no, 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 the Maunder is the best one, or this one, or that one. For me, it's the Süssmayr and the Levin. Those two are, in my opinion, the best, because you just can't go back in time. You know, there's no such thing as a time capsule to take us back. So you have to honor Süssmayr for being there. And then somebody's intellect like Levin to recreate. And he's just terrific.
The piece is also so powerful because, I mean, Mozart died young. He died at the age of, what, 32?
He was about 35.
35.
Yeah.
And he was, I mean, it's one of the great tragedies because had he matured the way Beethoven matured, we would have had music that is blowing all of our minds, and as it is, Mozart's. But I mean, this is a piece where you can feel the older person
Absolutely.
That he would have become.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, anybody's final work, especially if they're not struck dead suddenly, if they sort of know that it's coming, is going to be a culminating work. It's going to be something where they're making a statement, and Mozart certainly does that in the Requiem. We know that he had a playful personality. We know that he was a, you know, creative genius and a boy wonder from a very young age, and so he had that sort of spark. But it's not too many pieces in Mozart where you get the really serious, intense composition that you see in the Requiem, while at the same time, the same Mozartian lyricism and beautiful melodies and great solo writing that we associate with his operas, it's all there in the Requiem. So it's sort of the greatest fusion of the sacred and the secular.
And it's also a big piece, a lot of voices, a lot of instruments.
Absolutely. Well, we're doing this together with the Santa Fe Symphony, and it's a very unusual orchestration in that a typical wind group would have flutes and oboes and then possibly clarinets and bassoons. And in this one, he gets rid of the flutes and the oboes completely. So all the high, bright winds are gone, which creates a very dark color. And then he writes in a very specific way so that the low colors of the orchestra are very prominent. And for a Requiem, we would understand why, right? It has that sort of solemn nature. It's a very beautiful and unique composition.
Isn't it funny how we so easily use colors to represent sounds? I mean, when you're talking, I hear you saying blues and purples.
Absolutely. I use that terminology all the time.
Yeah.
And I associate it very strongly. And there are even some composers in history. Scriabin is one, the great Russian composer, earlier 20th century, who tried to create a strong sense of color sound combinations and associations one with another.
Yeah, and Kandinsky did it the other way around in painting, but I always looked at those paintings that he did that were supposed to represent tones in some way and never quite got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a musician, so that's where I always start.
Yeah. So the Mozart Requiem is happening over the next several days, and it's performed by the Desert Chorale and the Santa Fe Symphony. Tell us just a little bit about the Desert Chorale.
Sure. Desert Chorale is an extraordinary ensemble of 24 professional singers who come from all over North America, and we come to Santa Fe every summer and every winter. So usually we're here for about 5 weeks in the summer, which corresponds to about 4 weeks of concerts, usually about the second week of July to the second week of August. And then in the winter, we're here for the 2 and 3 weeks right around Christmas time. So it's a wonderful group. It's been around 33 years, founded by Larry Banfield back in 1982. An extraordinary group of people. These are the finest ensemble and solo singers from all over. So they really come to have a special experience in Santa Fe to create this incredible professional chamber choir. The breadth and depth of the repertoire that we perform is extraordinary. There are usually 4 different programs over the course of the summer. So everything from Renaissance music to contemporary music, a major work like we're doing with the Mozart this year, and everything in between. So it's really an extraordinary group of people.
Now, they come from all over the place. They come to Santa Fe twice a year. Back in their regular lives, do they tend to be choral singers, soloists, some of both?
They're all of the above. Some of them are academics where they're teaching. Some are professional singers full time. Some sing with other professional groups. What we're looking for is that person that's very rare in the singing world, which is to say somebody who has solo chops, who can stand out and deliver an extraordinary solo aria or what have you, and at the same time have the flexibility to be able to step back into a group and blend and cooperate in a sectional sound as well. And that particular combination of skills is rare and unique, and it's one of the most extraordinary things about the group, because you'll hear this beautiful, blended, transcendent sound. And then one person will step out and just let her rip and be a really dynamic and interesting singer. So it's an amazing thing, and the singers are really extraordinary in that way.
Is that particular skill set that you were just talking about, is that about the ability to modulate your voice and just sing in two different ways?
It's not necessarily to sing in two completely different ways, but to have a breadth and a variety of technique. So I guess in a way you could say yes, but it's not really as if solo singing is completely different from ensemble singing. It just requires a careful set of ears and an ability to listen, to find a way to cooperate, to find a way to fit your voice into another's without letting go of your individuality. And the singers of the Desert Chorale are really extraordinary at that. And I think it's a model for, a larger idea about society to see somebody who's, able to lead and able to be part of a group at the same time. I think it's a great model for what we need more of in this world.
Yeah, I guess if you think about leadership and your position as a leader in the Desert Corral, it's always a give and take, not just a one way.
No, by no means. It's a facilitation more than anything else. The skill set is so great, the talent in the room is so great, that my role is really to sort of set it loose and organize it and set it going in the right direction. But they need very little direction, to be honest with you. They're such extraordinary people.
I've been going to the opera, and of course, there are some choral scenes in those, and I suppose you need that same set of skills if you're an opera singer doing choral scenes.
That's ideal if you have that. It's rare in the opera world, to be honest, to find that, because they're, again, because they're dealing with very large orchestras and projection. Very often it's a question of volume, quality of sound over large distances that's prized in that world more necessarily than in ours. But it's certainly much of the same skill set and glorious music, no matter what form it takes.
Now, you have been talking about a whole new direction. There's a new group called Voasis, which I guess is a contraction of voices and oasis here in the desert. What's that?
We're really excited about this project. It's a contemporary pop, rock, jazz a cappella group. So a cappella music has really taken off, not just classical a cappella music that people associate with the Desert Chorale so often, but also the kind of music that's really making it in movies now. In television, you see programs like The Sing Off or movies like Pitch Perfect. Things like The Voice, which again, some of it is a cappella, some of it isn't. But in the case of The Sing Off, in the case of Pitch Perfect, it's a cappella music, which means without instruments. And it's a really exciting trend. It's been around for a long time, going back to college a cappella groups, which were very popular and still are. And then even before that, you're talking about barbershop music, doo-wop, and all the rest. So this has really taken off, and the Desert Chorale is excited to have this new group. They are essentially the pop rock equivalent singers to the classical singers in the Desert Chorale, which is to say they're the best people at what they do in their world, which is again that pop and rock world. And they'll be singing tunes, everything from Frank Sinatra to the B-52s to Beach Boys and everything in between. So it's an incredible thing. They come in the week after the Mozart ends. So our classical season ends August 7, 9, 10 with that Mozart Requiem. And then August 15, 16, and 17, Voasis is in town at Warehouse 21. So it's a
Nice.
different venue, whereas the Desert Chorale is often performing in more sacred spaces. Voasis will be in Warehouse 21, which is the perfect place for that kind of stuff. And they'll be singing all these incredible tunes and essentially creating a rock band with their mouths.
Voasis and the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. Now, the Santa Fe Desert Chorale is Thursday, Saturday, Sunday doing Mozart Requiem. What else is on that program?
There are several other pieces, two of which feature our mezzo-soprano soloist Susan Graham. She's going to be singing a movement from the Solemn Vespers, the Laudate Dominum, which is extremely popular and famous tune that most any Mozart lover will know. And then we'll also be doing the Laudamus Te from the C minor Mass, which is a soprano showpiece. Incredible virtuoso singing, coloratura. She goes to the very top and the very bottom of her range. It's an incredible showpiece for her, and she is, of course, a wonderful artist and also a lover of choral music, which is why she's been in partnership with the Desert Chorale several times now over the last couple seasons. And then we'll have the beautiful Ave Verum Corpus that many people know, the perfect 3-minute jewel piece for chorus and orchestra, and then another movement from the Solemn Vespers. So it's sure to be an incredible evening of one of our history's great composers.
Where are these pieces being performed, and where can people get tickets?
The performances of the Mozart program are August 7th and 9th, which is Thursday and Saturday, in Santa Fe at the Cathedral Basilica of St. Francis, so the large cathedral, and then August 10th in Albuquerque at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church. That's at 4 p.m., August 7th and 9th at 8 p.m., evening performances. And then the Voices performances are August 15 at 8, August 16, a matinee at 4, and then an evening show at 8. And then August 17, 4 p.m. at Warehouse 21 in Santa Fe. And if folks are interested in getting tickets, they can call the Desert Chorale office. It's 988-2282, or they can visit desertchorale.org.
Josh Haberman is music director of the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. They are on the web at desertchorale.org. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It was great to be with you. Thanks.